is Baseball Tonight, the podcast.
This is the Baseball Tonight podcast for Friday, February 28, 2020. I'm Buster Olney at the board back in Bristol, Taylor Schwenk. Well, Max Scherzer made his first appearance for the Nationals, or I should say his most recent appearance, on Thursday, and he was good. Five strikeouts in three innings. This was the beginning of it.
Mad Max nailed the infield in on an 0-2 pitch, and he blows the fastball by McCormick on a throw that went to the outfield. And he takes care of business, striking out the last two batters, but the Astros on the board. Four runs batted in. But a little different task here facing Max Scherzer, who has now struck out three in a row. As he goes down swinging, Scherzer ends up with two strikeouts in this inning, has four in the game. 1-2 pitch, and Pena, who walked his first time up, goes down swinging.
That, of course, from the Astros broadcast. The Red Sox announced that Chris Sale will begin the season on the injured list. Remember, he was backed up because of a fight with pneumonia in early February, but he continues to say that he feels really good physically. Not so much for Angels pitcher Griffin Canning. He will undergo an MRI on his sore elbow. Let's get to it.
All aboard. It's the Rabbit Train with Carl Ravitch.
Rabbit Train's in Florida because Carl Ravitch has been a little bit under the weather, and he's got to get his voice ready for the SEC tournament coming up. And, of course, baseball coverage. He's got an exhibition game, Braves and Red Sox, before working on opening day. Carl, how you feeling?
I'm getting there. I've turned a corner, but the voice is about 60%. And when you do things like the SEC tournament, you're doing two games a day. So we're doing our best to get this thing back. Not that anybody out there cares. As long as you can hear me, they probably would probably prefer to hear me less, actually. So maybe it works for everybody.
Yeah. And you do sound good right now. Continued health, continued improvement, I should say. And I want to get your thoughts on the development in the Angels camp. Yesterday, they announced that Griffin Canning, 23-year-old in the rotation, needed an MRI. I'm assuming that today we're going to get word from the Angels about what exactly is wrong with his elbow, but it certainly had that whole feel of, oh boy, you know, potential Tommy John. And look, right, for a casual fan, he's not a star pitcher, but he's an important guy for a team that already lacks starting pitching. If you're the Angels now, you're wondering, are dark clouds just going to follow you around all the time?
Yeah, I thought the Zen master, Joe Maddon, you know, and I'm sure they hoped, like, look, we're going to bring in Joe Maddon, you know, magical formula. We'll sprinkle some pixie dust around here. And these pitching injuries, whether it's Otani or Heaney or tragedy, there just becomes perception and reality. And the reality is that they have suffered a huge amount of arm injuries, you know, and they have some of the best orthopedics and doctors and I'm sure trainers, you know, in the world. But for instance, you know, the Yankees just went out and changed their entire philosophy and the way that they train and coach and teach. I'm not suggesting the Angels have to do that, but at some point you kind of look back over the recent history of the Angels and you do have to be worried. And yes, they need innings eaters. And maybe it's some of that magic bullet coffee that Joe drinks in the morning that everybody should have, because he's in good shape. He stays pretty healthy. But yes, I agree. This is a yellow orange type flag being raised once again for an Angels team that's fairly thin on starting pitching and just needs innings, because obviously their offense improved with Rendon. So they got to get some guys that can stay on the mound.
Oh, absolutely. And look, they just don't have any margin for error as they're trying to make up this ground against the Astros. And what a huge year this is. First year of Joe Maddon, but also the last year of Billy Epler's contract, general manager of the Angels. You do wonder what kind of trouble he's going to be in if they don't make progress this year. And so to lose a pitcher this early when there's not really that much pitching available. Recently Artie Moreno was told reporters that he's still looking for a front of the rotation type guy. Carl, I don't know where you get that guy. It's not like teams are out there in late February, early March saying, yeah, we're marketing a frontline starting pitcher.
No, and it's not as if there's one sitting out there in free agency, you know, a Boris client who hasn't signed yet.
Right.
They're all gone, and the Angels, played on Rendon, but they didn't get in on Strasburg, or if they did, they didn't obviously get to the point where they needed to. Some people thought that Gerrit Cole was going to end up there. That didn't happen. So, when you're looking around, it's not as if there's a bidding war going on for pitcher X, because pitcher X literally doesn't exist right now.
So yesterday, Madison Bumgarner made an appearance for the Diamondbacks, which typically would not draw a lot of attention. But because this was his first outing since that story broke the other day that he participated in offseason rodeos under the pseudonym Mason Saunders, there were a lot of reporters there. And, of course, he was asked about that after the appearance. Give a listen.
Felt really good out there today.
did you hear any comments from the fans in the bullpen, though? Or was there any talk?
Some people were saying, glad I'm here and stuff like that. But it was pretty good. It's hard to hear a lot, when you're out there getting ready, but, I'm excited about it.
What about just bringing, you kind of brought awareness to team roping and everything like that. How do you feel like you kind of raised the profile of those athletes?
Like I said, I'm not sure I could be any more clear, but I felt really good out there for the first time in spring training.
If I were advising Madison Bumgarner, not that he takes advice from anybody, Carl, probably less than any player in baseball, I'd say just do one press conference where you talk about Mason Saunders and calf roping. What do you think?
Yeah, I don't, the thing about Bumgarner, you almost wonder, like, Bumgarner's really smart. You do wonder if this is an effort to let the Players Association and Major League Baseball know that in his opinion, some of these restrictive policies about what I can and cannot do as a human being away from the baseball field, I'm not, he's saying, I'm not buying it. I'm going to do what I want to do. The great part for Bumgarner in this case was that he didn't get hurt again participating in something like that, because if he did, it would be a PR nightmare. To your point, I'm not sure he cares. That we've already dealt with, motocross and motorbike, and now we got rodeo. I agree. He literally probably doesn't care. He probably minimized the possibility of injury, or in his mind, rationalized it. Like, not an issue. You guys are making an issue out of something. I didn't jump out of an airplane. I wasn't on a motorbike. I was doing rodeo. And for anybody that knows rodeo, like I do, you're not going to get hurt. And I think that's the sort of place Madison lives on. And I think he's part of a pretty interesting team this year in that National League West. I think we all understand how good the Dodgers are going to be, but that's an interesting team. You don't have to win the division to get into the playoffs, and he's going to be a big part of it. I think part of Madison sometimes is, while he may realize it, he's a bit dismissive of the impact and import that he has to a team. He's really important to that team.
I want to be there at the press conference where Madison Bumgarner announces his retirement, because I'm intrigued by the actual stories behind the scenes. Bruce Bochy, his former manager, made reference to it the other day in an interview he did, where he said, yeah, Madison's done a lot of things. I probably shouldn't go into it. And I've heard that from two or three other people. I bet you that while he's been probably between starts, I think Bochy mentioned the other day that, yeah, he goes out and hunts bear between starts, yep, which is not usually a prescribed method for preparing for your next outing. But that's Madison Bumgarner. He is going to be him all the way through. You've got your first broadcast, as I mentioned, coming up. You've got Braves and Red Sox. What are you looking forward to seeing in Florida?
Well, I'm interested to see, by then the Red Sox will know whatever their punishment is going to be, and just the culture in that clubhouse. Whether they're found to have cheated to a huge degree, some degree, no degree. I think we all agree that when Alex Cora took over, things changed dramatically inside that clubhouse. He seemed to empower the likes of Bogarts and Devers and others. And now that Ron Renicki's in charge, I want to see what that clubhouse is like. Many of the players are the same, but you lose Mookie Betts and you lose David Price. So that's the overarching thing. And then I want to see Ronald Acuna. To me, I have him as the MVP this year in the National League, and that's a National League that's loaded with great young stars. But, I'm sure that you've had this conversation with others. If you're building a team in the National League, what young player are you building around? And a lot of people will say Juan Soto, and others, but I think he's the MVP, and I think he's a superstar, and I just wonder to what level Ronald Acuna goes. And I know he's obviously got the respect of everybody in that clubhouse, but I think we're poised to see even another level, because the team is really good. And at some point, you are going to have to, you know, pitch to him. You can't give him the Barry Bonds treatment. He's got too many really good players around him. So I'd say the culture in the Red Sox clubhouse and just the opportunity to see Ronald Acuna play.
What have you heard on the Red Sox situation? I guess I should ask it this way. How about we compare notes? Because what I've heard is that that investigators, during the process, they found something. And I don't know what that something is, but they asked very specific questions, and they built off that information. And I was also told that it's not nearly to the level of the Astros stuff. What have you heard?
Right. Yeah, I've heard that all along. I've heard that from players. I've heard that from people who have been with the Red Sox and either are no longer with them or their roles have changed. That it's not to the degree that the Astros cheating was. And again, I don't know if I told you this, but I, you know, there was a meeting before the LCS between the Astros and Red Sox that involved AJ Hinch, it involved Lunau, it involved Dombrowski, it involved Cora. And Joe Torre was in that meeting, and Torre basically said to the teams, both of them and all those people and anyone else that was in the room, look, if you're inclined or have gotten away with or are doing anything that would violate the rules that you're all aware of or should be aware of, you're going to have to understand at some point there's going to be a player or players or front office person that's going to leave your team, go to another team, and basically rat you guys out, basically tell, you know, the dirty secrets. So whether Joe Torre was aware at that point of what was coming from Mike Fiers, and there's no evidence to believe that, but I was told that that message and that meeting basically scared the heck out of those guys in that room to the point where they acknowledged, we're in trouble. We're dead. So we cannot continue this particular behavior. And in the case of the, you know, the person or persons that told me that, the behavior changed. And that's why I don't think that it's going to be to the degree that the Astros had. I'm not a conspiracy theorist that the Major League Baseball investigators and the commissioner's office are in a position where if they don't find something, they look foolish. I don't agree with that. But, you know, I think the idea that, you know, that Cora was identified as, you know, sort of the bad actor in the Astros organization, almost above everyone else, even though we have subsequently found out at least where the code breaker originated, and it wasn't from a player or a coach or a manager, that he's, you know, that he's not necessarily in a position to be punished any greater with the Red Sox than he will be with the Astros. I've heard what you've heard. I do think that sometimes, and I've been told that these investigations can lead to other investigations. So whether they found something out about the Red Sox or they've been tipped off to quote unquote, another scheme, another cheating scandal, I don't have the answer, but I do agree that the length of time this is taking, you know, is uncomfortable. Well, let's put it that way.
Carl, I hadn't heard that story from you before, and I got to say, like, every person that you just mentioned who's in that meeting is a really smart person, and my reaction was, really? That? You needed to hear that to understand the reality that is, you know, that the idea of trying to keep a secret among 40 people in a traveling party for an extended period of time, that you needed to be told in that way to scare you? I find that to be a little crazy.
You know, there's a lot of that type of thinking that you just expressed, yeah, that I would agree with. But I will say, you know, that these guys that were doing this, while they were doing it, they acknowledged, many of the people that I spoke to, we never thought about the other people involved, meaning the people that we were hurting. And lo and behold, now that it's been exposed, you look back on it and you'd say to yourself, how did you, yep, not realize this when it comes to the impact on pitchers, when it comes to guys who had to throw 2 or 3 days in a row because your offense was bludgeoning the starting pitching? They, I promise you, Buster, and I don't believe that this is made up or a lie, they didn't think of that. So the concept that somebody has now kind of shed light on something you should have been aware of, but you're so blind to it because you're so embedded in this cheating and it's working and you're winning and no one is really getting you in trouble, that when somebody sort of shines a light on another dark corner of your cheating, which can expose you, I do think that, yes, there is a light bulb that goes off when somebody points it out to you. Holy crap. We should have thought of that. We never did. And yeah, now we're, you know, here's another way we can get caught. And by the way, just because somebody sheds a light on a way in which you can be exposed, you have to then in your own mind figure to yourself, okay, well, what's the risk? What's the reward? Is this real? Can that really happen? And what's the likelihood? And you know what? I'm going to minimize it. I don't think any player is going to break the code and go somewhere else and expose us, so we're going to keep doing it. So I hear you, but I really do believe that whether it's naive, whether it's ignorance, whether it's arrogance, that there is the ability to block out reality. Like, screw it. I'm not. I hear you. Thanks, but I'm not gonna deal with that until the time comes. And the time hadn't come then yet. It's not as if it was presented to those guys. We got you. It's a matter of time. We have you. So you want to stop this now, or you know we're letting you know we have you. Until somebody says we got you, I don't know that they're going to be intimidated enough or willing to change what they're doing.
And I think it just comes down to competitiveness, where you're in the bunker, you're competing, you're battling day in, day out, and that drives you. You've seen this spring how the Astros hitters have been hit 7 times already. Our old friend, yeah, Will Middlebrooks, who recently retired, sent out on Twitter this morning, you know, 5 of the 7 Astros hit by pitches have been off-speed pitches. 2 of the players hit are on the AA roster, so let's chill. And all these posts about it, this, of course, because of all the conversation about whether or not the Astros are going to get hit. John Daniels, the general manager of the Texas Rangers, was on radio yesterday and talked about this.
I mean, we're going to be real clear. I mean, Woody and I have talked. We're trying to win the game, you know. I mean, that's not how we're looking to handle things. We're not going to be out for – we're going to make sure our players understand from an organizational standpoint, you know, we are not looking for our players or condoning in any way our players going after the Astros players.
So I think that's what John Daniels needs to say, Carl, but it'll make no difference. It really comes down to what the pitchers standing on the mound, what they want to do. Yep. And I, you know, told the story earlier this week about Hunter Strickland a few years ago. After Bryce Harper had taken a long time going around the bases, Hunter Strickland had in his mind that at some point he wanted to throw at Bryce Harper, and he did, and a big brawl broke out. And at some point this year, there's probably going to be a pitcher on the mound with a ball in his hand with an Astro guy in the batter's box, and he's going to decide, I don't care what's been said. I don't care about the warnings. This is something that's important to me. And as long as they stay within the party line of, yes, I was just trying to pitch inside, yes, the fastball got away, they're not really going to be in jeopardy. What do you think?
I think John Daniels and every other general manager should come out and strongly support the idea of my pitchers aren't going to throw at Astro hitters. That's great. You know, you've kind of absolved yourself of responsibility in it. It also has nothing to do with what each individual pitcher is going to do on the mound. And to Will Middlebrook's point, while it may very well be that many of these are breaking balls and they're double-A players, I don't necessarily think that injury is, at least in my opinion, and I certainly hope that injuring Astro hitters is the goal of a pitcher. I hope that's not the case. That would really be terrible and awful, and show a little bit more actually about the pitcher than it does about the Astros cheaters, because you don't need to do that. But I do think every time an Astro hitter is hit in any way is another message. You cheated, we're pissed, and this is what I want to do. I don't really particularly care how hard the ball is thrown. I certainly would hate to see something thrown up at the head, but if 35 Astro hitters get hit in the first 2 months, sorry, there's a message being sent, breaking ball or not. You know, hey, I made my point. Like, oh, yeah, I went out, I hit Springer, sure, I hit Altuve. I actually plunked Yordan Alvarez. You know, in a sense, it's like going back to your house and checking one of the boxes that are on the refrigerator, piece of paper. Check, got that. Took the garbage out, got that. Emptied the refrigerator of old cold cuts. Check, did that. Hit an Astro hitter. Check, did that. you know, it's sort of a laundry list for certain people. So I think John Daniels is appropriate. I would hope every GM would say, we're not intending to hit any Astro hitters. We got the memo from Major League Baseball. But that's a CYA. That's to cover his butt. You know, that makes sense. But no, I think that, to your point, whether it's Strickland or Scherzer or whoever the heck it may be, it doesn't matter. If I want to hit an Astro hitter, with all due respect to John Daniels or any other general manager, depending on the situation in the game, that's what I'm doing. Boom, we hit him. Check that box.
2 days ago, the Yankees announced that Giancarlo Stanton is out with a calf injury. And, of course, the media yesterday rightly focused on one of the guys who could be absorbing some of the at-bats when Stanton is out, and that would be Clint Frazier. And he had a good day. Hit a double, drew a walk. He has looked good this spring. He looks thinner. And he's an interesting guy to me, Carl, because, you know, this is someone who's always been seen as having talent, a former first-round pick. He was the key 100%. Guy in a trade that the Yankees made, Andrew Miller to the Indians back in 2016. You see the bat speed. Last year, we also saw really bad defense. It didn't seem like he handled some of the criticism right, but, you know, that's happened sometimes with young guys. He's 25 years old. It seems like he's in an absolutely perfect opportunity to take advantage of the fact that other guys are getting hurt.
Yeah, 100%. Clint Frazier's always been a guy that I've looked at and thought if he were given playing time and worked on his defensive fundamentals, he's borderline, I wouldn't say great, but he is way better than the average. And because of his speed, because of that power, because of how quick his bat is, I always thought Clint Frazier would be spectacular if he could play every day. So I agree with you on that. I think it's a big opportunity. I think he showed signs last year. The problem with watching and understanding sort of the history of Clint Frazier is, you know, every time a ball is put up in the air and it's hit to where he is, you're like, okay, wow, let's grade him out on that particular play. Good route, got underneath the ball, circled it, caught it with one hand, caught it with two hands. Good, you know, you're sort of analyzing every little thing that he does. And at some point that microscope becomes almost unbearable. And you know, I'm kind of, just let him play for a while. The other part of it, it's hard to understand how somebody who can look, you know, like Giancarlo Stanton does, how he gets hurt so often is kind of puzzling. And it's one thing, you know, to, as the Yankees get off the bus, you look at them and you'll be like, ooh, that is one of the great basketball teams I've ever seen. Look at the size. That's a near football program, the way they're all, you know, so big and so strong and jacked up. It's one thing to look great in a uniform, but it's another thing to actually play in a uniform. And when he's not on the field, that hurts the Yankees. And it's a hard one to look at and be like, how does somebody that looks like that get hurt so often? And why do baseball players, in particular a guy like that, struggle so much when we watch, you know, NFL players who get just drilled every week and get up on a Monday and they're black and blue and bruised and, you know, torn and strained and all that. How do they get back on the field on Sunday the next week? And I understand the day-to-day stuff, but gosh, it's one of those where I know Yankee fans are like, what is the deal with Giancarlo Stanton? You know, I'd love to say he's great in a GQ magazine and a swimsuit issue of Sports Illustrated, but I really want him wearing a Yankee uniform and playing.
Yeah, I got to believe that one of the conversations going on in the Yankees organization is about his size. I remember a couple of years ago when Yoenis Cespedes of the Mets went on this offseason program where he was deadlifting, 1,000 pounds. He worked out with our friend Jessica Mendoza. And I remember even watching it then, like, that's great, but what does that have to do with baseball? And the other thing, too, is that there was never any doubt about Cespedes having power. And I feel the same way about Stanton. He's jacked up. He clearly, you know, he lifts very heavily with his upper body, but there's not any doubt that he's going to hit for power, whether he dropped 30 pounds or not.
Yeah, I think you'd have to, Buster. I think that's a great question for a sports psychologist, because I think a lot of these athletes believe that the reason that they are so successful is because of what they've done to get there. And in his case, it has been physical fitness. It has been being stronger than most other guys. You know, you've been there in the clubhouse. You know, when he walks around, you're like, okay, bodybuilder. And you look at somebody like Brett Gardner and you say, strong but flexible. He hit a whole bunch of home runs last year. I'm not sure that it translates to somebody like Stanton the way that it does to you. Like, dude, you flick your wrists and the ball goes over. He may then say, yeah, you know why? Because I'm in the gym and I'm lifting weights, and that's my deal. That's how I, you know, psychologically need to feel. When I go into that gym, I need to get a good pump, and I need to put that uniform on and just feel stronger than everybody else. That's a trainer, that's a psychologist, that's a physical therapist type question, because I think it has to do more with the mentality of the individual than it does with maybe the logic that you're trying to apply to it.
Pedro Gomez covers baseball for ESPN, plus a lot of other stuff. Plus, he's a dad of a pitching prospect in the Red Sox organization. Pedro, when we were talking to Jeff Passan earlier this week, I said, give me the name of a young player you're looking forward to watching, and he dropped your son's name. What's the latest on Rio?
Rio got in. You know how they'll bring up minor leaguers as backups for a big league spring training game? Yep. On Monday, he made his debut in a big league spring training game at Port Charlotte against the Rays. And it went, I think, how a lot of very, very first times go. He was nervous as hell. He walked the first batter on four pitches. Three of those pitches were not close. I talked to him after. He's like, Dad, I don't even remember throwing a pitch. I was so nervous out there. And, you know, subsequently, I talked to people. Like, I spoke to Joe Girardi about this. And he asked about my son. I told him the whole story, and he said, that's the kind of guy I want. I want someone who cares so much that he's nervous. I don't want guys that don't care because they're not nervous and they don't care. So that's a good sign. So I'm taking that as a positive sign.
Now, how did you find out that he was pitching that day? Because obviously, as a reporter, you know some people.
Well, I knew he was backing up. And I was at Tampa with the Yankees, so I could not get down to Port Charlotte. But I had, you know, MLB.tv, and I'm watching. And Pete Abraham, who covers the Red Sox for the Globe, you know, when you're watching the game on the phone, you can't see who's warming up in the bullpen. They don't necessarily talk about that in spring training games. So Pete texted me and said, here he comes. And my heart immediately started racing. And I got up, and I was like a nervous wreck. I was walking, pacing. I'm a pacer. And it was just nerve-wracking. And then I'm watching my phone, and they show him running in from the bullpen. I was losing it.
Oh, man. Whenever he makes his Major League debut, I can't wait to see that. I can't wait. You know, that's great for Rio, but I'm mostly very interested in watching you. Rio, watch him.
I'll need a paramedic. I don't think there's any doubt.
All right. You've been to a bunch of camps this spring. I want to ask you about new managers and new places, okay? And in some cases, these are old managers in new places. Just get a feel for what might be a little bit different in that particular camp, or what might be the same, and what you see in these guys. Let's start with David Ross, who takes over as manager for the Cubs.
You know, it's a really good atmosphere there, and I think a lot of that has to do with the fact that so many guys in that clubhouse know David Ross, that were teammates with David Ross. That's going to be an interesting dynamic, though. How do you separate friendship from now being the boss? And that's a question that I think is going to be there throughout the season, to see how both sides handle it. Not just Ross, but how guys like Anthony Rizzo and Chris Bryant and John Lester, guys who were, you know, very close to him as teammates. How does that dynamic work?
And it's been interesting to me to see some of the comments coming out of the Cubs camp, which I you can't say are direct criticisms of Madden, but they certainly read that way, that there's some sort of like, yeah, it was time for a change.
Well, and sometimes that does happen. I remember Tony La Russa telling me that once you're a manager at a place for 8-9 years, your message just kind of gets lost. It just becomes background noise. And that's when it's time to move on. So, Joe Madden, the Cubs had more success under Joe Madden than they have maybe in the history of their organization. I mean, they made the playoffs 4 straight years. They went to the World Series. They won the World Series. So it's hard to argue with his resume during those 5 years in Chicago, but maybe, you know, sometimes it is time for a change. And speaking of Madden, look, Brad Ausmus was there only 1 year, but I can tell you that there's a lot of people in the Angels camp who feel this refreshed energy from having Joe Madden now with the Angels. They feel like that experiment, or whatever you want to call it, the 1 year that Ausmus was there, wasn't necessarily the best move for that organization. And right now, they feel a very, very positive vibe with Madden, who has, you know, a different way of managing. Like, they're playing this game spike ball before they stretch, and it's just to create camaraderie. You know, Joe does things like that.
Yeah, and what do you see in Joe with the change? Because I, you know, and you mentioned the idea that, you know, that La Russa told you about how the message sort of drifts away. I remember talking to Terry Francona, who went to work for us after he was fired by the Red Sox, and it was ugly. And the next spring when I saw Tito, he was like, yeah, it was time. Like, it was time to turn the page. What do you see in Madden in a new place?
Oh, I think it was time. I think that's a good way to describe it. It was time for him to leave and to start anew. And look, I think Joe Madden could have had the Padres job if he wanted it, but I think he felt a strong pull to go back to his roots. You know, let's not forget that Madden worked for the Angels for 31 years, most of that in the minor league level. So he has a strong commitment to that organization. And I think that's one of the reasons that the owner, Artie Moreno, said, this is the guy. This guy cares about the Angels. And we know Artie Moreno cares about the brand so much. Like, that's one of the most important parts for him. So having a guy whose core is Angels, I think that was important. And Joe has certainly brought a different vibe to that clubhouse. And, you know, it seems to be working right now. The players are really, they like what they see.
Two old managers in new places, Mike Matheny, now with Kansas City after all those years with the Cardinals, and Joe Girardi in his first year with the Phillies after all those years with the Yankees. And it's interesting. I think they're in very similar spots, Pedro, because after Mike Matheny was fired by the Cardinals, you saw players, again, sort of that indirect shots about his communication. Joe Girardi, when he left, Brian Cashman was very blunt, saying that he felt like that Joe's connection with some of the players had gone by the wayside. I suspect that both these guys, like someone like Buck Showalter, probably learned and absorbed all that and grew from that. What do you think?
I completely agree with you. I think in Girardi's case, he's in a really good spot. Look, this is a professional manager, so to speak. And I know we hate using that term, like professional hitter. They're all professionals. But, you know, you had a rookie manager the last few years in Gabe Kapler who had never managed before. And the sense I get is the Phillies really like the fact that there is so much structure and there's a resume that goes with the manager right now. And they seem to really be responding. It's early. It's obviously early. But there's definitely a belief that, hey, we have a major league manager now. And that's a big part of what we needed. And in Matheny's case, look, Matheny's in a tougher spot. That Royals club is really young. You know, they lost 100-plus games last year. It's hard to see them improving that much. But, you know, this is going to be a good test for Matheny. Can you work with younger players and help develop them? Because in St. Louis, that was never the case. That was a veteran club. That was always a contending club. So this is brand new for Matheny, and I don't think we're going to know how he handles it until we watch him during the season.
All right, Pedro. Well, just be forewarned, we're going to be watching you while you watch Rio.
I'll be like Chris Mortensen when he was watching his son quarterback that game for the Titans in the preseason.
Exactly. Thanks for doing this.
All right, Buster.
Bleacher Tweets.
Alrighty, Buster. Last set of tweets to end the week. Red Leg Mania at Wayne Krachiki. Sorry if I botched your name there. So most Red fans think that Joey Votto is going to bounce back to his old self. Wayne's asking, do you agree with me that any bounce back will only be minor and not to his quote-unquote old self?
Red Leg, I think it just comes down to whether or not he stays healthy. You know, he's 36 years old, and from what I understand, I mean, he spoke at the end of last season about how he was embarrassed by his performance. He's trained like crazy, but I think when you hit that age, you just never know how healthy you can stay during the course of a long season, and that will be the key.
Ghost of Tal's Hill at Tal's Hill MMP writes in all the talk about sign stealing, don't forget there are still Astros fans who want to talk baseball. How about we talk about what will be a good team in 2020? Thoughts on the rotation, sans Cole?
Yeah, I think they'll be clearly the favorite to win the division again. But, you know, you make reference to the rotation. You're going to get Lance McCullers back. You hope that he's okay. Or Akiti, who was so good in the postseason last year. Valdez. They've got some candidates at the back end. Abreu. It'll be interesting to see how that develops as the year goes along. And let's face it. You know, I think the thing everyone's going to be looking at during the year is how the players, the position players, react to the criticism they get. But for practical purposes, I think it comes down to how does the back end of the rotation perform without Garrett Cole?
Robert Hardy at Robert Hardy writes in, based on the ability of each of their division rivals to contend for playoff races over the next few years, does any team have a bigger rock to push up the rebuild hill than the Mariners? Love that phrase. I think it's catching on, Buster.
Yeah, exactly. And sorry to do this to you, Taylor, but no, the Mariners don't have the biggest hill. It's your team, the Orioles.
Mm.
They absolutely have the biggest. They have a Mount Everest mountain, because not only do they have a lot of rebuilding to do, but you always got the Red Sox and you always got the Yankees spending all that money at the top of your division.
Yeah, and then you have the Rays that are a well-run team. Imagine that. Who, you know, the Orioles should take that. All right, last one for the week. Brian Roll at BrianBaseball5 writes in, do you think the Yankees should try Andujar at second base to increase his versatility with defensive positioning shifts? And if Moustakas can do it, it seems like he could handle it at least part-time.
Yeah, Brian, in tune with modern-day analytics. Look, the defensive play of the second baseman, the value of that, has the perceived value of it has gone down in recent years because of the slide rule. And you're right. I mean, if Mike Moustakas can play that spot, then Miguel Andujar in certain situations, yeah, you absolutely could put him there depending on who else is available on a given day. I like your idea.
And that'll do it for Bleacher Tweets for the week. Hashtag Bleacher Tweets on Twitter. Definitely subscribe, rate, and review. And if you missed any episodes during the week, you know, you got a couple days while you're running some errands, you're cleaning up around the house, hitting the gym on Saturday morning, go back and listen if, you know, you missed Tuesday episode or whatever. And then coming next week, divisional previews up on Tuesday, AL East and the NL West on Thursday.
My thanks today to Carl, to Pedro, to Taylor. Thanks for listening, everybody, and have a great weekend.
Thanks for listening to the Baseball Tonight podcast. If you're playing fantasy baseball, don't forget to listen to the Fantasy Focus podcast. Check out all podcasts at ESPN.com/podcenter. Baseball Tonight, the podcast.